Hello, thank you for joining us today. This is the session on the actuarial phoenix. So welcome again. I'd like to introduce you to Leslie Traverso, who is one of the speakers today. Leslie's had an extensive career in international recruitment and human resources. I've got a huge history here. I might just give you a summary of Leslie's career. It's absolutely amazing. So she started her actuarial recruitment career in 1993 in London. In 2003, she established the international division of D.W. Simpson in Australia. In 2012, Leslie joined the Quantium Group as the head of human resources, which is a great career move for a qualified actuary, I have to say. In 2015, she helped to establish the Talent Insights Group, a recruitment business in actuarial analytics and risk recruitment market. If you don't already know, Leslie does a lot of volunteer work for the Institute of Actuaries. She is on the team of the Actuaries Digital. And this is at least, she's lost count, at least the sixth time that she's been on the organising committee for the Actuaries Summit. So thank you, Leslie. And then she's also given us a little bit of her personal interests, which is also amazing. I had no idea. Leslie enjoys freedom of flying aeroplanes via her private pilot's licence, often upside down. So we know how she's returning to Sydney today in any case. So the other author of this paper is Jules Gribble, who could not be here today, but we'd just like to acknowledge him as the co-author of this paper. He's a senior policy advisor with the International Association of Insurance Supervisors. So please welcome Leslie. She'll start her presentation. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. The advantage of wearing reading glasses is I can't actually see you. So that's good. This paper that Jules and I have put together is a little bit, at the moment, a bit of a jumble of ideas, trying to sort of throw out some different ideas, get some feedback from you guys to bring something together. It's a sort of a culmination of a lot of conversations that we had. We just didn't quite get around to writing it until last week. The theme of this summit is thinking differently. And prior to the presentation, we've been asked to summarise how we contribute to this, and so we've addressed the question in several ways. We propose taking a different perspective on actuarial skills and profession, propose that the technical and professional and practice aspects of actuarial education and practice, both entry and ongoing, should be given equal weight and importance. We propose that the Institute should become the manager of education and its delivery, especially for the technical aspects, while retaining the delivery of core professional aspects that make an actuary different and valuable to users of actuarial services. This should then permit the profession to benefit from the widespread and rapid development of technical knowledge, while retaining the essence of being actuaries and actuarial practice. The profession is experiencing change and challenge globally from a variety of sources: regulatory, technological, political, unmatched supply and demand. The impacts of these challenges are felt differently in different global markets. And to maintain relevance, the actuary, in its broadest sense, meaning all those possessing a particular skill set, needs to be reinvented and represented to users, both traditional and new, of actuarial services. We believe that Australia can drive this global paradigm shift in the perceptions about and practices of the people that we identify as practitioners of actuarial science, to try and keep a short form for a big group of people. We anticipate that one of the key outcomes of this paper will be discussion on how the profession can expand its reach, create a profile or a product that is attuned to and responds to a rapidly changing market, and ensure that any changes to the education process are revolutionary where necessary. This will then provide PAS, I'm using that as just a short acronym for now, with multiple viable career trajectories, and at the same time provide a means for the wider non-insurance markets to better understand the value of the professional actuarial skill set in their context. As the education process is currently under review in Australia and the International Actuarial Association has released its recent guidelines, we discuss a simple overall framework for actuarial education. This includes both entry and ongoing CPD education needs. It also includes the technical and professional practice aspects of actuarial education. and we trust that this is going to be a useful contribution to the current debate. While this debate is now taking place in Australia, since Australia has in many ways moved further down a pathway away from traditional practices, we suggest the Australian experience and discussion may prove insights for others. So in light of the education review being carried out by the Institute and the International Actuarial Association's revised syllabus in 2005, together with the rapidly changing market that I witness on an everyday basis, it's opportune to put some ideas into context for the key issues. With any major review of a system that's complex and deeply embedded, there is a danger that it's just the edges that are tinkered with, rather than taking a big step back, looking deeply at the fundamental issues, and producing maybe a paradigm shift or two as a solution. So try and get some order to our thoughts by applying a traditional SWOT analysis in the next section. And the ideas that we've put into this paper, some of them can be a little bit contradictory, and the idea there is to incite some conversation. So key strengths. Deeper and more philosophical question of what more precisely is the essence of the actuary, maybe bottle it and sell it for a fortune, maybe should be left for another day. But it should be addressed to underpin the discussion of what sort of actuarial services provided by what sorts of actuarial service providers do we want to produce in the future. We all know the key strengths. Integrating managing processes, interpreting results, translating into business solutions to support the business decision makers, prioritising potential solutions, modelling technical skills, applying the traditional actuarial strengths of judgment, materiality and equity, which requires a capacity to understand issues from multiple perspectives, conducting work in a professional and ethical way, and the actuarial culture following a code of conduct and benefit from professional guidance and value of peer review. These are some of the things that differentiate professions from other people who can do mathematically type things. But what prevents actuaries from adding this value? As mentioned, the small size of profession, there is no critical mass, the lack of marketing. Is this a case of we could have done it if they let us? Has there been an expectation within the profession of being able to do anything analytical that comes along? Has there been perhaps a certain arrogance around the qualification? It's a terminology that a former employer of mine used quite a lot. The current education process has been identified as maybe not fit for current and future market trends. There is a supply and mismatch in some areas in the market. So where might be the opportunities? In ERM, seen as an area that actuaries quite rightly moving into, but many boards now consider ERM to be about governance risks, which actually is only one face of the cube, but many risks are actually not easily quantifiable, and therefore they have the perception that the challenge is actually a legal one, not an actuarial one. Data analytics. Many organisations use actuaries for data analytics work very, very successfully. But I've been hearing from people that I've spoken to that some are now moving away from using actuaries and instead are using technical software experts because actuaries, they believe, do not have the exposure to techniques that are found in other backgrounds more easily and cheaply. This, for me, was quite a key finding and relates to my earlier point of what is the value that an actuary can add. And it's not just about technical, it's at that interpretive level. And that's the message that I think is somehow not getting across to everybody outside of the profession. So machine learning and robotics will take over some of the work that actuaries do now, but also open up a lot more opportunity to focus on strategy and design. There are many transferable skills, particularly when there's a shift to be from a focus from being on the tools to judging and defining by outputs and not inputs. That concept also applies to working arrangements, but that's also as a subject for another day. So what about increasing the size of the profession? How could we potentially bring in people who are on the fringes currently, encourage them to be part of an inclusive actuarial profession and community? perhaps there is an opportunity to regard the actuarial science degree programme as a door opener or a stepping stone to a variety of roles, not just perceived as it has been as a one route option. Then we could look at potential members as those who are providers of actuarial services, not just within the current definition of what an actuary is. So how could the profession cater for growth in global financial inclusion, microinsurance, inclusive insurance, not only with regard to product, but risk management more broadly? Another opportunity, how to develop actuarial brand nationally and to a certain extent in practicality, globally, is a global profession. So what are some of the threats that will prevent actuaries from achieving their maximum potential? The actuarial domain is being nibbled away. I've noticed in the last year or so, a lot of the adverts that I see for actuarial roles, which historically would have been carried out by somebody with only an actuarial background, are now saying a stats background, a maths background, much more broadly than they used to be away. So that I think the domain is being nibbled away. I think the actuarial training and education system has been built on historic market requirements, which aren't necessarily future-proofed. Some skills and training is missing for transition to new sectors, data analytics being one. Referring back to Genevieve's presentation yesterday, there is a lot of technical skill that needs to be brought into that particular domain for actuaries to be able to maximise the value in that domain. There is a mismatch between what the actuarial skill set is and what the external perceptions are. So some of the key questions maybe to be addressed. What will the actuarial job market look like in the future, and how will today's actuary equip themselves to be valued within it? The education structure, what is delivered and who is going to deliver it? How could CPD be further developed to be of value in the real world? How do our actuaries market themselves more effectively in the wider world? The profession marketing the profession, individuals marketing themselves. So on picking up on education specifically, overriding principles, universities should teach the technical aspects and the institute should teach people to become professional actuaries. Rather than have professionalism as a specific course at the end of part two, maybe embed it more deeply throughout the whole of the process. Perhaps develop a para-actuary-style designation for support roles and actuarial teams based on the International Actuarial Association's core curriculum. This could be a stepping stone to a fully-fledged qualification for some students. It also encompasses those who choose not to continue with the actuarial exams. It will increase membership of the Institute and keep people and get more people engaged for longer. Perhaps integrate the International Actuarial Association curriculum into the Part 1 in order to facilitate greater numbers of starters and an earlier entry point. This would also provide an alternative route for late entry or overseas students. They could do a localisation course to be able to graduate, for example. If the universities are to concentrate on Part 1... as has been proposed, and part two, return to the Australian Institute for Teaching as proposed, maybe the actuarial degree at part one will have more room to incorporate some of these wider technical learnings, and particularly the soft skills. One of the other proposals has been that the Institute take over the teaching of part two. But in my experience, given the shortage of experienced actuarial educators in the local market, this is a question then, is it really the place the Institute be teaching technical skills, or should the Institute be focusing on professional skills? Look at maybe focusing the part three on the sophisticated application of transferable skill sets. Again, that was an option, but instead of domains. This will change the emphasis to principles-based skills that can be applied through the lens of a domain area. Consider redesigning the part three that becomes more modular and portable and open to anybody who has the requisite background but not necessarily wants to continue to associateship or fellowship. This may be including those that haven't taken part two but may have worked in a specific area for a long time. I'm not saying that these people all automatically receive a designation, but it's a way of expanding the actuarial education into a broader reach. Maybe another idea might be to consider developing a series of practicing certificates. I don't like the word, but something like that, that are required after a certain amount of working experience. For example, risk management, valuation reporting, data analytics. The philosophy then similar to a medical profession, where the medical degree is the basis on which further specialisations are developed. But this would require a serious review of the CPD process. So on CPD, we think there is needed really here a bit of a paradigm shift. We don't live in the 19th century where initial education may be sufficient to support a lifelong professional career. Knowledge is expanding at an accelerating rate. On initial education, no matter how good, it's not adequate for a full career. One clear implication now is that CPD is a necessary component of maintaining a profession and a current set of actuarial tools. Perhaps we need to upgrade the role and status of CPD to reflect this. There is an argument that suggests that CPD is more important than the entry qualification, especially when coupled with a structured recognition of the value of experience. But we're away from that currently. In the 2015 Institute Business Plan, it states CPD cannot be a profit centre, as members expect it for free. This may be a great example of the need to change paradigms and reorientate member expectations. Some investigation into other professions' funding of CPD would be useful to feed in here. We must always ensure that there is an enforceable code of conduct, peer review system, and at all times preserving the public interest. And this feeds into the question of differentiation. If a number of people are able to do certain mathematical tasks, to simplify it, what does differentiate the actuary? And that's about the code of conduct, it's about the professionalism and everything that everybody expects somebody to have who is a member of a professional body. Perhaps we should be looking at finding courses on education opportunities that are already happening in different parts of the world and piggyback on the back of them. Marketing. We think there's a need to be more proactive, develop a clear strategy incorporating the use of social media. Spend some more time as a profession reaching out to key decision makers outside of financial services to workshop how actuaries can solve their business problems. I just listened to a very interesting talk by Julia Lessing and the work that she's doing in the social area, which is a fascinating way of how to extend and develop the actuarial skill set outside of the traditional insurance area. On the employers, internship programs. We know there's there are very, very successful co-op programs currently being used, but this is not extended to necessarily to all students. And perhaps there is a three-way responsibility between the institute, employers, and universities to give students a chance to get more experience, employers a chance to see what they can do, and the institute a good marketing opportunity. Perhaps make it a degree requirement. But recognising as well that there are challenges around visas and travel for overseas students. Develop the actuary's strategic and visionary skill sets, encourage collaboration across entities, business units, product lines, and business functions. In one of the papers that I read produced, I think it was by Deloitte, they talked about improving the diversity of the talent pipeline, distinguishing between performance and potential at performance reviews. Encouraging actuaries to work in non-traditional roles before being promoted to manager level, pairing actuaries with other people with the rest of the business for mutual career development, and the other one, realising that the actuarial skill set is actually supremely suited to flexible working arrangements. One of the things that I examples that I used in a talk I did recently about diversity and management and profession was a conversation I had with a client at a bank who said, yes, of course, we strongly promote flexible working, until I asked him whether he was happy with somebody working 4 days, and it was, no, not that flexible, which is a shame. So just to step into the educational structure for a moment, Jules and I came up with trying to have a stab at a way of having a look at things a little bit more visually. So this is sort of a simple framework. Trying to split here the timing of the actuarial education into two parts, the entry part, the ongoing part. That is, getting accepted into the profession and then remaining in it. Splitting the education and training needs into two parts, technical and professional. That's the traditional formal, more mathematical and related knowledge on one hand, and the professionalism and application of that knowledge through the services provided to users on the other hand. Another way of looking at this might be the hard and soft skills. This framework then puts a structure around the components that make up an education and career development programme. With these four quadrants, we note the reality that actuarial education needs to be delivered, and so the providers of that education need to be considered an integral part of the process. There is no point having a theoretical system which cannot be sustainably, flexibly and proactively implemented. In the diagram, you'll see some small boxes on the boundary between entry and ongoing education, indicating that there are various types of qualification, used in its broader sense, to be considered. We've deliberately kept the diagram sort of simple, consider it's rich enough to identify some critical and fundamental issues. We think that a framework is needed so that components can act together in an integrated and coherent way, and it's easier to see which parts should be looked after by whom and how it can all fit together effectively. It's trying to achieve the best overall outcome for the profession, its members, and what the users see. That should be its key focus. Rather than optimising one part of it, it's looking at the expense of the overall. It's the overall outcome that should be acknowledged and confronted. A little bit about when you're choosing an investment. You don't just choose one investment. You choose a portfolio to get the outcome that you want. We suggest that the historic and even current focus is on the entry technical education quadrant leading to fellowship, the orange shaded box there. In contrast, in this diagram, there is equal weight given to both entry, pre-qualification work and CPD. In Jules' words, once you get good, you need to stay good. This can be at least as difficult as getting there in the first place. How often do sporting teams that win their premiership repeat the next year? There is another side of the education framework to consider, that is the perspective of the users of actuarial skills and services. In Australia, there are some parts of the market for which there is an oversupply of actuaries. We've known this for a while, and there has been ongoing discussions, as we know, about getting broadening into broader fields, and some victories in that. Some capable individuals have blazed successful career paths. But the key challenge has been to get the users of actuarial services to appreciate the value that they can bring. This, in the part, is where the need for softer skills comes to its own, and where the education system needs to reflect and support that reality. So the technical aspects, the areas that should remain with the universities, the professional and practice aspects should remain with the institute. The overall management, in contrast to delivery of the actuarial education process, should remain with the Institute as it is the sole legally recognised body for the actuarial professions in the country. A management challenge for the Institute is thus how to determine what aspects of the actuarial education process can be outsourced, and then to manage that outsourcing in relationships effectively. And outsourcing might not just be to Australian universities, outsourcing might be to an overseas institute or an overseas provider of education. The other challenge for the institute is sustainably and effectively manage the development and delivery of all the remaining aspects that can't be outsourced. Spreading the delivery of actuarial education makes it easier to see how a more modular system could be developed to take into account those currently on the outside of the actuarial tent, but who would like to learn more about some aspects of the actuarial world, but maybe not become a fully fledged actuary. And it also permits a broader tent, to continue the analogy, to be established where stronger recognition can be given to technical skills acquired through routes that are not typically actuarial ones, permitting the Institute to take better advantage of other education providers whose work can support the profession. We acknowledge that there is potential, there is something of a paradigm shift here. But we suggest that this should be addressed through professional and practice aspects of actuarial education framework, as it's an overlay that drives the differentiation between professional actuaries and practicing technicians. So there's a lot of ideas there, and I apologise, some of it's a little bit jumbled. It's been put together and not in its final state yet. The idea was to create some discussion, to have some new thoughts, just to see what we can do together. I'd love to hear some questions and some comments from the floor. And there's also the ideas board outside there as well for anything else that you come up with in the future. But if I may, I'd like to open to questions.
Could I also ask you come to the microphone and note your name, please, for any questions?
Hi, this is Nick Hill from Mercer. There's another example of another profession where, I think it's the legal profession, where CPD ended up being quite commoditized and became profit center for these providers that popped up. And it wasn't really serving its purpose as being continuous. It was just a tick box exercise and a profit center for new organizations. And I can't remember where, but I think in one industry, it might have been legal in some country, they just took away the CPD requirement because it wasn't working. It's not quite the same in the actual profession, but it's a real challenge. And I've also read about another. It's almost like volunteering. So in the actual profession, we have sort of, you can volunteer your time to develop. And what we have is, as actuaries, we tend to like, we need to have the solution before we present something. And that's part of when we're volunteering or trying to write a discussion paper, we kind of need this need to have a conclusion or a solution. And that might be hindering us as well. So the first part is, look, CPD... To sort of fix it or change it, it's very difficult in every industry. But the other aspect is actually volunteering our time and actuaries being advocates for the actual institute by putting more out there. Maybe we need to move away from that. Look, we need to be correct and right and peer-reviewed and discussed in the big group so we can get more stuff out there, more discussion papers out there. I'd just like to have your comments on those two points.
Yeah, I agree about the complexity, and clearly there was a lot of questions in this paper and no answers for that reason, that it is complex. But it is different from the legal profession, and I wouldn't want to go, obviously, down that sort of commoditised route, because that isn't the point. The point is to try and provide some form of support for actuaries throughout their careers to enable people to continue to keep up with changes and be equipped to deal with those changes as they come along. And, I mean, the legal profession is massive. It's probably 10 times or 100 times the size of the actuarial profession, and that's always the challenge, is the size and lack of resources to be able to do that.
I told you I was going to speak, Leslie. John Evans, I'm here in my capacity as a Senior Vice President. I should declare a conflict of interest. I'm from the Sydney University Business School as well. First of all, be careful what you wish for. You're probably going to get a lot of that pretty soon. I'll accept on the CPD, we've done a pretty bad job. We are trying to fix it, and I have no idea why it's not working, but it's not working. So both Jenny and I are very concerned about the CPD. I had a conversation on Monday night with the president of the International Actuarial Association, who's here. The International Actuarial Association is thinking about introducing some compulsory... they can't make compulsory anything, but suggesting that members would have some CPD content. I think the risk is, and the reason it's not going too far, it become commoditized. We are very concerned about CPD. We think it is absolutely necessary. There's two functions in CPD. One is just to update your education, get a bit out of date, what people are thinking. The other is for new areas, and it's part of this expansion of the actuarial profession. The other thing is that I think hopefully by the December Council meeting, we will be making an announcement on change to the education system. Nothing happens overnight, so don't get excited. There'll be a statement probably on an aspirational qualification system. It will look horribly like what it is now, except the associateship will become compulsory. I think we're pretty well agreed on that. At the moment, it's not compulsory, and students just don't go through the associateship. We know that. So we're probably going to make that compulsory. There may well be an entry exam, independent of the universities. Don't worry, I'd fail. I haven't done this stuff for a long time. So that's pretty well where it's going. On top of all that, and then I'll sit down and shut up, the International Actuarial Association Syllabus 2015, I'm told, is likely to go through in Chicago, at the meeting in Chicago, and will be implementable sometime around 2020, 2021, something like that. It actually gives, it's equivalent to the Part 1, and it actually gives the universities a lot more scope to do, to upgrade the core, the units or subjects they're teaching, and to differentiate themselves, which is something I'm quite concerned about. I just don't want universities all doing the same thing. I'm sick to death of sitting at information days at university and being asked, what's the difference between you and Macquarie? Nothing. Reality, there's no difference. And I do want the universities to differentiate, move into new areas. I think we are making progress. I think your ideas are excellent. We are moving in that direction.
Thank you.
Andrea Glass, PwC New Zealand. I was at some actuarial drinks after a function a couple of months ago, and I spoke to a kind of quieter, shyer member of the profession about what he was up to. He said, oh, I've been recruiting. I'm recruiting a geek for a really boring job. And I spent about the next half hour talking to him about how important it is not to be recruiting geeks into the profession, how important it is to be recruiting well-rounded people, and how important it is to be providing interesting jobs for those well-rounded people that you're recruiting. And to me, the diversity and the skill set of the people that we are recruiting and bringing into the profession are really key to some of the issues that you've raised.
Yeah.
I think you mentioned jobs that used to go to actuaries that go to people with different skill sets. Well, why aren't we recruiting people with those skill sets or those papers in their undergraduate degrees into the profession? That not only builds diversity into the team that you yourself manage and recruit, but into the profession as well. I was really interested to notice on your list of weaknesses, they were all about the profession and they weren't about the people. And again, those skills that you can recruit for can be used to address some of those weaknesses. So not being well known, bring more gregarious people into the profession and have them help solve some of those problems.
Thank you.
Genevieve Hayes from VMIA. From speaking to people, one of the greatest deterrents I see to people getting into the profession and going through to Part 3s is the very high fail rates on the Part 3 exams. Do you think something should be done to address that, and if so, what?
Yes, I do. It's probably a question that John could answer better than I can on that. Put you on the spot now. Come on then, you're allowed a second go.
The answer is yes, we are doing something. Without letting the genie out of the box, and I use the word likely, I can't guarantee anything, it hasn't gone through council yet, I want to make that very clear. It is highly likely the Part 3s will be done in a combination of e-learning. We are looking at an e-learning system. We've engaged an expert in the space to try and help us because we don't know what we're doing. So it's the first move. But I should point out there is a strong resistance in the membership when we go to them about, they've got nicer words than this, but the reality is about increasing the pass rate. There is a strong resistance inside the membership. I think it's a translation of the quality thing. I think if we could show that we can maintain the quality but letting the pass rate get up, I think people would be okay. But at the moment, if we just came out and said, we're going to make it easier for people to get through, that'd be it. We wouldn't survive. So, yes, we are doing something. The other thing I'd have to say that's extremely important, and I'm going to try and address this next year, we lack scale. It is a big issue for the Institute here. We just don't have scale, and so the cost of actually doing a mammoth change to the education system, we couldn't afford to do it every 2 years or 3 years. So it has to be something that's going to be sustainable for quite some time, and the risk is we then actually leave it in place way beyond its drop-dead date. So that's a risk because of the scale issue. Okay?
Thank you.
Leon Yan, Cogmore Travel Insurance. I'll just call out a few observations that I've made in my career on the learning. So most GI companies I've worked for use SaaS, but we were not taught SaaS in university, or back in my day we weren't. We learnt C++, but when I went out into the workforce I realised no one used C++. R is getting a lot of attention right now, but back in uni we were shown, I don't know, simpler tools like Minitab. We were taught all these complex loss reserving methods, but I found all the insurers just used Chainladder out of simplicity and efficiency. What else? We used a lot of ResQ, but no one had heard of ResQ in university. In pricing, we use Emblem and Radar. None of that was mentioned in uni either. So, yeah, just calling out these very simple things. So maybe if we just align what is needed in the workforce and maybe give all the students an introduction to those things. Thanks.
I think that is such an excellent point. I was going to raise that because I think Leslie touched on data analytics, and within organisations, you will get people being hired for their SQL and programming skills and things like that. And I'm just reflecting on this because I work in life insurance, and it's absolutely mandatory for all our analysts to be able to use Profit as the Excel of life insurance, or SaaS in GI. So when people join our organisation, we spend the first 3 months just teaching them tools. But having said that, why is this not part of the education system? Because tools are so important for any analyst entering the industry. So I have a follow-up question on the future-proofing of the education system. And whether you've seen anything, and maybe it's also a question for John, who I might like to invite out the front, in international associations, actuarial, you know, have you seen them trying to future-proof the actuarial education in some ways? And what are some of those things that we might be thinking of bringing to Australia?
I think I'll go pass that one to John, if I may.
Sorry, guys.
Please come to the front, John.
Okay.
Be a lot easier.
You've got a star spot, you see.
Okay. The answer is, regrettably, I don't think we're there. It is of concern. It's an issue I've been raising in council. We have spent an awful lot of time. We've been meeting almost weekly, which is a huge amount of time for council on this. The new international 2015 syllabus is intended, it's nowhere near as draconian as the current syllabus from the IFOA. The IFOA for some of the courses has over 185 things that you have to teach. Well, forget it, you haven't got time to do anything else and you can't even do 185. The new International Actuarial Association syllabus is intended to be fairly high level, and therefore to allow the universities to actually develop the courses in due as things change, research changes. To answer our colleague here about R and those sorts of things, yes, that's the intention, the absolute intention, to actually make sure they are in the system. But coming back particularly to your question about future-proofing, we're not there, I'll be blunt. It is an issue. Having been working in universities, we struggle with it, but we get there eventually, just before the death knell, I think, sometimes. But particularly in business schools, that's the only thing I'm used to working in. We do get there. There are processes inside universities to try and do this. But it comes back to this scale issue I was mentioning. We just don't have the scale to employ people inside the Institute who have that intellectual horsepower. We just don't have it. So it's an issue I'm grappling with. We are highly likely to employ educationalists, probably 2 to 3 people next year, inside the Institute to work with the Part 3s. and hopefully they will be able to do some of this future proofing. It's the only solution we've got at the moment, and it's not satisfactory. Thank you.
Rachel Pover, Aon. Just a comment on the point about the part threes and the pass rate. I've worked in the UK and here. I've helped students with marking mock papers for the exams. And my observation from that is that they're not understanding necessarily the point of the part threes, or at least my view of the point of the part threes, in that the profession, what we offer differently is that critical thinking. And from my observation with looking at those papers, it's very much kind of, this is the answer, rather than, this is the answer because, and this is the impact. And I think if we can somehow, with the education system and however we change it and how we do part threes, we can get that kind of the impact and the critical aspect, I think that's going to help people pass. And I also think it's going to help the profession in its kind of why we're different. And whether that can be done, and we're talking about pro bono and things like that. I saw that on the comments board about what can we do differently. Perhaps it's in the education space. We help senior actuaries help students a bit better. In that way. Is there another way of doing it?
No, I think that's a really good point. It comes back to the point of the differentiation, if you like, between the technical skill set and the professionalism, the judgment, the, you know, how to apply that in the real world, and developing that a bit more. I think that's a really, really good idea, good point.
So I'm also from the UK and UK educated, and there's a few things. Just following up from some of the points about future-proofing, there should be a little bit of onus. Life companies will be doing SAS training. Maybe the institute or whatever is the current thing. And the way I understand data analytics is evolving so much. If you draw up a syllabus this year, it'll be superseded the next year, which is one of the challenges. But the little bit of onus might be on the employers who have got 3 weeks of SAS training, and there'll be, you know, 20 other employers doing 3 weeks of SAS training. Maybe the Actuaries Institute can work together to combine that training and materials into a course that's outside of it becomes CPD or something, which is very relevant. Now, coming from the UK, part of that in the organisation, as much as they didn't like saying this, and this is for a few years ago though, we didn't like to recruit people with actuarial degrees. There was more, oh, we'll take somebody with English, maybe maths background, that's the maths A level, which is years ago, that can do it, but have done a degree in engineering, maths, English, anything, as long as they've got the competency to be a well-rounded person in. And the reason actual students went, because they've been shown that they can pass the exams and whatnot, and they're coming in with this much actual education experience, but this much life experience, it's just putting it flipping on the head. You could learn all the tools that are relevant, but that burden should maybe go onto the employer to work together with the profession. Or should we be teaching people to be critical thinkers and examining whether they're critical thinkers?
And I think that point goes with the, if you like, the four quadrants, is that there is a huge focus on passing exams. And it's how to sort of get that balance, I think, as well as the judgment and all of the things that were really important.
We just have one last question, given someone standing at the microphone. Thank you.
Sorry, Darren Stevens from Bravura Solutions. I'm giving away my age here, but when I started, only Macquarie University existed. I came out of doing a biochemistry degree and a zoology degree out of Queensland, and did it through the UK. And My first point around that was there was no support for me as a correspondence student, and it was terrible doing it through an institute rather than through an education facility. So it's a very difficult thing for students, and it's a very difficult thing for the profession to maintain. The second thing was that I did it while working full time, and to me it was like an apprenticeship, and I learned about the tools on the job. And, you know, it was invaluable experience. And I learned about how to deal with people, and I learned how to communicate, and I learned how to analyse problems in real-life scenarios. And the majority of the students at my when I was going through were late 20s. Mm. They'd done their university degrees. They came in and they started studying actuarial. They were working at the same time. And I felt we were a much more rounded group than the group that I was seeing coming straight out of university, sometimes with all of their final exams and being actuaries almost immediately without any practical experience. So for me, it's very important for us to maintain that apprenticeship and also to bring people in from a broader sphere. And we heard that yesterday from a number of people saying we're very pillared in our focus in our careers. We study the same things. We don't get a broad range of subjects that we study at university, so we don't see that broad range of experience coming into our profession.
Yeah, quite agree.
Thank you, Darren. Thank you so much for the very interesting discussion. Could you please consider filling out the speaker feedback forms, which is on the Institute of Actuaries app, and join me in thanking Leslie for this very interesting speech.